Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Coming up today, I don't know what happened. Yes, I do. Seattle finally mustered the political will to clear homeless encampments. Of course, not for any legitimate reason. It's so that we don't embarrass ourselves on the national stage ahead of the MLB All-Star game. But there is an effort among activists in Seattle to thwart the city's efforts to look good for the big game. We'll discuss. Also, an unbelievable claim about the cocaine found at the White House. We'll dive into that. And the Washington State Democratic Party already pulling out their old tired playbook ahead of the expected announcement tomorrow of Dave Reichert's run for governor as a Republican. So we will discuss all of those things and more. If you have not become an Undivided subscriber already, please do so. It's how we do this show. It's how we make the show possible with your support for just $5 a month. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Support our mission and our movement and support independent journalism that doesn't suck. We want to remind you, and we'll remind you a couple times today because it's our last opportunity, that we've already planned your Friday night for you. You're welcome. We're going to be in Enumclaw at Headworks Brewing Company from 3 to 6 p.m. for the final scheduled meet and greet on our tour around the state to say hello to you, but also get you to sign Referendum 101 to restore parental rights in Washington state and stop the erosion of those rights dead in its tracks. And I said, we've already planned your whole Friday night because you can come 3 to 6, say hello to Nicole and I, grab a beer at Headworks, and then they have a classic car parade. All the way through downtown. So bring the kids, bring everyone. And Nicole and I are going to be riding in a classic car, giving you our best supermodel, what do you call it? Pageant queen wave. So we've already planned your Friday night. You're welcome. Now you know what you're going to be doing. We have a goal of 1,000 signatures. I think we can top that. But a 1,000 is a pretty lofty goal. All right. As I mentioned, Seattle has found a bunch of political will that I didn't know existed in the city leading up to the MLB All-Star game, which is technically on the 11th, but there's a lot of festivities in the days before the actual game itself. And one of the things that the city is all of a sudden cool with doing is going in and sweeping homeless encampments, moving derelict RVs out of the Soto area where the stadiums are. This is the article from Como News. Leave or be towed. City officials warn remaining RVs in Soto to leave as MLB All-Star Week looms. So may I remind you that I was indeed correct about all of this. We knew the city was going to come in the days and weeks leading up to the All-Star game and all of a sudden make the city all brand new and shiny so that they weren't embarrassed nationally. Our friend Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle was actually down in Soto, sent us some video because indeed the sweeps are in full force today in the Soto area around the stadiums. Andrea spoke to a homeless woman who's not happy about it.
They're sweeping all of this street. I mean, all it is they don't want the homeless scene because of the All-Star game and tourist season. But it's wrong. It is absolutely wrong that they keep pushing us out of town.
Can't be too surprised by it, though, that it's going to be happening. And you saw the proximity there to the stadiums where these homeless encampments are being swept. However, activists in Seattle, not ones to be outmaneuvered by Mayor Bruce Harrell, are planning to try to disrupt whatever success there might be for the city of the All-Star game. This is pretty unreal. So Katie Davis Court tweeted this. I think she got it. She found it on Reddit. She tweeted, the Seattle homeless community announced they will be going to war during the MLB All-Star game. Homeless vagrants plan to occupy the parking lots of tailgate areas in defiance of the city removing their encampments before the game. So just to read you this flyer, it says, F baseball, F this mayor, F this city. Let's F their day up, July 11th, the All-Star game. They've been pushing us around for months, hoping to clear us out of sight for the MLB All-Star game on July 11th. Let's make sure all their work was for nothing. So they're very blatantly saying that they want to sabotage the success of the All-Star game. And then they have a timeline where they are trying to plan how to. So I'm just going to read part of this because it really shows the extent to which they are absolutely determined to make the city look bad. It says, just imagine when the tailgaters and rich a-holes show up for the big game, they're going to find exactly what the city worked so hard to prevent, us. They have a timeline, July 10th, all day, prepare to move. It says a support team will come around to supply coffee and food and help with last minute problems. July 11th, 12 a.m. Move to Soto. We'll figure out exactly where. Just don't arrive sooner than midnight. 1 a.m. We'll have a little party. And then it goes on and on from there about how they're going to strategically try to move in to these tailgate areas that the city has worked to clear ahead of the All-Star game. Now, I want to take one issue with what Katie Davis-Court said in her tweet, saying the Seattle homeless community announced they will be going to war. Homeless vagrants plan to occupy the parking lots. This is not homeless people. This is not the idea of homeless people. This is not homeless people and vagrants, as she says, creating this flyer and pushing it out. These are activists. These are Stop the Sweep activists who are using homeless individuals, keeping homeless individuals in their squalor and suffering and addiction to make a political point about wealth. That's what they do. That's what they've been doing in Seattle for years to some degree of success, which is sick and sad for these activists to, again, show up at sweeps, try to stop the sweeps, try to block the sweeps, for these people who are being moved out, offered services ahead of the MLB All-Star game. They want to try to convince to move them to move back in into areas where the city's going to come and sweep them again, as if that helps anything. As if using these poor, homeless, drug-addicted, sometimes mentally ill individuals to push your uber-progressive leftist narrative is doing anything for them? Shame on you. Shame on you. Now, the one thing that the activists and I will agree on is that I don't think it's right to come in and just for optics sweep people out of these encampments. I think that these people should have been swept out of the encampments a long time ago, but that the root causes of the issues need to be addressed. So I don't agree with what the city is doing in the weeks leading up to the All-Star game. And because it's just, again, we talked about it on the show yesterday, it's just taking a little detour around the problem as opposed to addressing it head on. But the fact that they are then going to use these people to make a political point makes them even worse than the city, to be fair. Now there's a question about, okay, what is the city going to do about it? So the city knows, okay, there might be some effort from activists to move these individuals back into places that we have cleared them from. Well, Andrea Suarez also took a video, took some photos of these concrete, huge concrete blocks that the city is using to put into areas where they've swept encampments. So I talked to Andrea a little bit ago. We can roll this video. They basically have been spending the last few weeks clearing encampments in the area around the stadium, and then in the place of those encampments, putting these giant, what they call eco blocks, because allegedly they're eco-friendly somehow, stupid, concrete blocks, so that you can't then have those encampments reappear ahead of the MLB All-Star game. So look, I get it. That makes sense. It's what we call hostile architecture. So you make a place completely inhospitable for someone to camp or to sleep. But here's the thing that bothers me about that. A year ago around this time, business owners in the Ballard neighborhood of Seattle were fed up with the homeless crisis. They were fed up with tents, blocking areas, making it difficult for people to come and patronize their businesses. They were fed up with drug addicts passed out in public right-of-ways, making it difficult for people to come and patronize their businesses. So what did those businesses do? Well, the business owners in Ballard got some of those concrete blocks. They rented them, and they had them dropped, sometimes in public places, to keep the tents from forming there because they were so fed up. And what did the city of Seattle and Mayor Bruce Harrell do at the time? Well, they scolded these business owners for doing the exact same thing that they're now doing to keep homeless people out of the area around the stadium. Here's a report from the time.
Eco blocks from dozens in a row to a few scattered along public streets. They are popular, but it's illegal to park them in a public space.
So I'm out there talking to small businesses, talking to homeless advocates about that issue. We do want them removed. So we'll monitor, we'll regulate, and again, we have SDOT working feverishly on this issue.
The city sends letters to adjacent property owners telling them it's their legal responsibility to move them. Then nothing.
It's a little harder to enforce, but certainly we're looking at a very smart and fair enforcement strategy.
As one West Seattle resident told me after coexisting with an RV encampment, the concrete blocks are an act of desperation. the mayor what he would say to those who insist the eco blocks work.
Our strategy just can't be focused on one issue. It's the whole ecosystem around there, and we are on our job, so we understand it. But eco blocks are just not the way either.
Huh. That Como News story. Eco blocks are not the way either. So business owners fed up in an act of desperation last year who decided to use these concrete blocks to stop RVs from parking there. Bad people. Shouldn't do it. We're sending them cease and desists. But for the city of Seattle, which is now desperate to make sure that the MLB All-Star Game isn't a complete disaster for the city and that fans aren't attacked or feel unsafe walking to and from the stadium, they're using those exact same blocks now to stop RVs and homeless encampments from forming there. You can't make this stuff up. And Nicole, you've reached out to the mayor's office today.
I did.
To ask them about that.
Yeah,
hypocrisy.
I quoted him in that video and said, has your stance changed?
And I'm sure they sent you a good explanation. What was it?
No response yet.
Oh, okay. Good.
They have some time.
Do they? No, they don't. I'm just kidding. But look, again, we know that those blocks work to prevent people from, you can't park on one of those blocks. You cannot set a tent up on one of those blocks. You could try to sleep on one of those blocks, but that would be very uncomfortable. So we know that they work, but when business owners do it to protect their livelihoods, to protect their neighborhoods, to protect their patrons, and to protect their employees, it's bad. You can't do it. Nope, city won't tolerate it. But when the city does it to make sure a baseball game goes well, then it's A-OK. That is absolutely ridiculous. All right, coming up next, Washington State Democrats are already reaching into their bag of tired, worn-out tricks, pulling out their favorite one just for Dave Reichert ahead of his gubernatorial campaign announcement. We'll talk about that next. But first, we've been talking about our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com, awesome real estate agent in the area. If you're in the market to sell your home, I highly recommend going to sellwithwes.com and seeing what he and his team have to offer, including a really cool listing boost concierge service where they will come in, do an assessment of your home, and then even try to help you with some of what you might need to do to it before putting it on the market. Here's Wes Jones.
So we're going to come in, number one, and we're going to inspect a home, do a pre-inspection, and we're going to find out all those little hidden bugs that, you know, a buyer may be concerned with. And if a seller wants to do some cosmetic updates, you know, whether it's flooring, whether it's lighting, countertops, even a kitchen, we're going to help guide them through that. So the Listing Boost Concierge Service, what we can do is we can project manage those rehab projects. We have a list of contractors and preferred vendors that we like to work with and have a ton of experience with, and we'll take that off a seller's hands. We'll go ahead and run that project for them, and we even have some options where they can pay at closing out of their net proceeds.
Yeah, and how great is that? I mean, the stress of selling a home, especially if you need to move right away, and you don't have time, you don't have the money to do what needs to be done to make sure you get the best possible offers for your house. For Wes Jones and his team to come in and take care of all of that for you with trusted contractors, etc., I think that's a really cool service they offer. So check them out, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, Dave Reichert, we're told, is going to announce officially his campaign for governor tomorrow. And I think that this is going to shake up the race in a major way. And Washington State Democrats know that. They know that very quickly it's probably going to become a race between Dave Reichert and Bob Ferguson. And they will say anything, do anything to try to distract each and every one of you from some of the issues that they know do not play well for them. Crime. I mean, we just talked about homelessness, drug abuse, crime, taxation, people feeling the weight of the governor's carbon tax, the new long-term care tax. They don't want to talk about any of that stuff. Of course they don't. And I don't blame them, right? You don't want to enter a campaign talking about the things that don't make you look good. And so they need to reach into their old sad bag of tricks ahead of Dave announcing, and they need to pull out whatever is going to work for them. So what is that? Abortion. Right? Dave is a conservative, okay? And I know, and this is something I look forward to talking to him about, his personal views on abortion versus his political stance on the issue in Washington State. But this is the fear-mongering aspect. So Washington Democrats sent out a tweet. They said, Republican Dave Reichert has entered the race for Washington's next governor and is known to be anti-choice. His radical ideals will put millions of women at risk in Washington State and others across the country that seek access to reproductive care. That's all they have. That's all they have. And look, Dave is a smart man. Dave knows that the people of Washington State have made it very clear where they stand, by and large, on reproductive rights. I guarantee you that Dave is going to address this when he announces his campaign and in interviews. And yeah, Dave is a religious man. He is a conservative. I have no doubt that he has strong personal opinions on this matter, but I'm sure that there's going to be some nuance there when it comes to what he would or would not do. But again, this is lazy for Democrats. What are the, let's go through it. Three things I bet that you're going to hear Democrats try to hurl at Dave Reichert. We already know, right? Trump. Oh, everyone who's a Republican loves Donald Trump, is a MAGA. How long before they call Dave Reichert a MAGA Republican? Even though Dave Reichert was not a fan of Donald Trump. In fact, I interviewed him when he left Congress, when he decided to retire, and he was very disappointed with the state of political discourse, in part because of Trump. They're also going to, again, the abortion issue, which I hope Dave Reichert learns a lesson from the Tiffany Smiley campaign and comes out strong and forcefully to make sure he stakes his own position on that issue before they define it for him. And then if those things don't work, well, gosh, they'll find a way to go after him for LGBTQ rights or something. That's going to be their own tried and true standby. So I think the key here is focusing on the actual issues that are impacting Washingtonians every single day. I'm not saying those other things aren't important, reproductive rights, gay rights, etc. But Democrats are going to use those strictly as attempts to fearmonger, to avoid talking about their record or their ideas on other critical issues like taxation, crime, homelessness, etc. So the old tired playbook is in full effect. It's our job not to let it work on us or our friends or our family. Okay, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. We talked yesterday about the cocaine in the White House and how the media is joking about it, ha ha, hearty har, when they would never have covered it that way if it happened under Donald Trump. All I ask for is a little consistency, right? A little intellectual honesty, if you will. So Politico. So here I'm thinking when this cocaine is found. Look, I didn't immediately say, oh, it's Hunter Biden's cocaine, even though he's a known drug abuser. I think there are probably a lot of explanations for how cocaine could have gotten the White House, who could have brought it. I'm okay with having a nuanced conversation, and I'm not going to jump to conclusions about whether it was a visitor to the White House or whether it was Hunter Biden himself who got this cocaine and brought it in. However, I thought to myself when the story first broke, well, they're going to be able to figure that out real quick. We're talking about what is one of the most secure buildings in the entire world that houses the leader of the free world. Let's just say there's a lot of security at the White House. There are a lot of cameras at the White House. There is a lot of law enforcement investigatory power at the dispense of the White House. And so I thought, well, no, we'll have an image, a surveillance image before long of the person putting the little bag of cocaine there. Well, Politico doesn't think so. Politico writes, White House cocaine culprit unlikely to be found, law enforcement official says. It goes on to read, lines may have been snorted and crossed, but it's possible we won't know by whom. Law enforcement officials confirmed on Wednesday that cocaine was found at the White House over the weekend. But one official familiar with the investigation cautioned that the source of the drug was unlikely to be determined, given that it was discovered in a highly trafficked area of the West Wing. Well, how convenient is that? Within days, unlikely that we'll know. Before really any investigative prowess is thrown at the issue, yeah, unlikely that we know. This is how conspiracies are born. This is why the internet thinks it's Hunter Biden's cocaine. Because within days, investigators are like, oh, we'll probably never find out. You don't think that they have cameras in a highly trafficked area of the West Wing? You don't think if they wanted to know, they had the capability to do touch DNA or fingerprints on any of those areas to figure out whose items, who they have visitor logs everywhere you go in the White House? You're telling me you can't narrow it down based on any of those things at all? And you're telling me that if that powdery substance turned out to be, I don't know, anthrax, that they wouldn't figure out exactly who put it there and where, when and where it came from? Of course they would. Of course they would. So you tell me a legitimate reason why investigators this early on into the inquiry would already be telling Politico, oh, it's unlikely that we'll ever find out who put a bag of cocaine in one of the most highly secure areas of one of the most highly secure buildings in the world where there is plentiful cameras, security, and investigative ability to figure it out.
And in the land of touch DNA or the time anything. Of touch DNA, I mean, they can solve anything. And all you have to do is, like, touch something and, yeah, so baloney.
Why don't...
That's hogwash and baloney.
You know what it is? It's unbelievable.
It's very unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. So anyway, I guess we'll never know Hunter Biden. No, I'm just kidding. But is that not how conspiracies are born?
Absolutely.
And that's like with the whole Epstein and all that stuff, where there's just hidden things that make people, like Epstein's actions for years and years and years, mm-hmm. just squash. And it's like, well, that's what makes people buy into conspiracies. That there's involvement from other people, politicians, political families,
sure,
et cetera. You know what I mean? But you know what I mean? That's why I think people jump to conspiracies so quickly. And sometimes conspiracies, as
but
you say, turn out to be true.
Right.
Sometimes they turn out to be true. But in the absence of anything believable mm-hmm. or legitimate information, people are like, okay, well, now I'm going to the worst case scenario.
Yep.
What's the worst case scenario? Well, it's Hunter Biden's cocaine and
right.
you don't want people to know about it. Now, I'm not saying I believe that. But when I hear an investigator say, oh, we'll probably never know. I'm like, okay, dude.
See, I would think that they would want to clear it up so that that's not
right.
the assumption people make. And, you know, I think that if Trump was in there and they were blaming one of his kids or something like that, I mean, they would. They would figure it out because they would need to clear somebody because otherwise we would have impeachment for cocaine in the White House.
Well, if it was Trump's kids, we had a DOJ press conference and
right.
everybody throwing the full force of the government at it.
Yep.
But no, just an innocent bag of coke in the White
Can't
House.
Figure it out. It was just sitting in this lady's purse with her ID next to it. We'll probably never know who
probably
it is.
Never know. White substance in the White House. All right. Coming up next. A real concerning statistic when it comes to military readiness in this country. I already have a lot of deep-seated concerns about the readiness of our armed forces, but this number, I gotta say, I was pretty shocked by. So we'll dive into that coming up next, along with our segment, Florida Report. But first, if you are feeling the strain of gas prices, if you're feeling the strain of the new long-term care tax, which will hit, you'll notice it on your next paycheck, we have an opportunity for you to be able to find ways to save a little bit of money, and that's by taking the First Mark Challenge. Mike and I took it a couple months ago. We're now members of the First Mark family. What they'll do is they'll go through all of your current insurance. They'll talk to you about their insurance needs, and then they'll go out and they'll shop the big carriers, and they'll come back to you. And thousands of families that have taken the First Mark Challenge have saved money. And so for Mike and I, what we learned is we were really underinsured, kind of scary how underinsured we were, and we work hard, and that freaked us out. And so we ended up getting much better insurance for about the same price. So it was a no-brainer for us, and we learned a lot in the process. Here's Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark.
So the risk is if you get in an auto accident and you don't have enough coverage, you get in an auto accident that's your fault and you don't have enough coverage, then they can come after you personally for any additional amounts over and above your coverage limit. And that means things like your retirement plan or come after your equity in your home or garnish your wages. So it's a big thing. And like with you and Mike, I just think most people haven't had someone take the time to explain it to them in terms they can understand and show them the how inexpensive it is to actually get the correct coverage.
Yeah. So no matter what, it's going to be a learning experience for you. They might come back and say, hey, your insurance is already pretty good. You have a low rate. I'd keep it. Or like Mike and I, we're going to get better insurance for the same price. Or you're going to save money. We just heard from a viewer yesterday who says she's saving $100 a month after doing the First Mark Challenge. That's $1,200 a year. I had to do the math quick, but I feel like that's pretty easy math to do, even though I'm blonde. $1,200 a year. So that helps offset the increased cost of gas. It helps offset the long-term care tax. So I really mean it. It is a good way. If your budget is stretched over these new costs for you and your family, it just takes a little time to do the First Mark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. They work for you, and you don't pay them a dime, by the way, to do it, which is really cool. All right, dipping outside of Washington State for a moment, 77% of young Americans could not serve in the armed forces today, even if they wanted to. That's according to military.com. They write, even more young Americans are unfit to serve, a new study finds. Here's why. And I saw the headline. I'm like, and I couldn't think about why that might be. And then I read it and I was like, okay, that makes sense. So it says a new study from the Pentagon shows that 77% of young Americans would not qualify for military service without a waiver due to being overweight, using drugs, or having a mental or physical health problem. That's insane. I mean, I knew that we had issues with all of those things, right? We have a huge mental health crisis because our kids just can't form real relationships with anyone. We obviously have an obesity crisis in the United States. And so what freaks me out about this is I think our military readiness is already terrible. I mean, when you see all these, oh, and the military using like a drag queen to try to recruit people, and it's like, oh my God, China's looking at us and just absolutely laughing at us. So I'm already concerned about the view of the U.S. military and readiness, but you already had lower recruitment numbers, which has been an issue. And then when you add on top of that, the fact that, okay, we've got to have enough soldiers to be able to perform basic functions of the military. And so what's going to happen? Well, they're going to start issuing a lot of waivers. They're going to have to, right? They're going to issue waivers to overweight people. They're going to issue waivers to people who are maybe a little bit mentally unstable or who have some sort of physical limitation that's going to limit the job that they can do in the military. And that is going to drastically decrease not only our military readiness, but the quality of our military forces. And so this is a national security issue for sure. And it is a crisis. And the fact that, and again, the mental health issue to me is one that the U.S. needs to, I know it's complicated. You know, the obesity crisis is a little different. We know what causes obesity. You know, we know how we can deal with it. The mental health crisis, I get that it's a more complex problem, Nicole.
Oh, I was just going to say, I do know somebody that has had this affect them their whole life now because they were prescribed medication for ADHD.
Right.
And that is just such an easy prescription now for doctors to write for kids. And not that they don't need it, but maybe we need to look into the repercussions of a lifetime after being prescribed that, because now he can't become a pilot. He can't.
Yeah.
I mean, they would have to get him a waiver for joining the military because he took it for about a month. But
wow.
It's in his record, and they have to look at that as a mental health problem.
Yeah, and I get that. You know, I think some people, he took it for a month. I think a waiver in that case makes a lot of sense.
Right, but they can, he can't get it for being a pilot.
But I'm saying, like, for some of these, they're going to have to start issuing more waivers or loosen standards, which we don't love. I mean, that's what's happening in law enforcement. They can't get people to want to be cops. And so what are they going to do? They're going to drop the standards. We've done stories on that before.
Right.
And so people complain, which is just this vicious cycle, because people complain, oh, cops are poorly trained and they, you know, use unnecessary force, da-da-da. And then it's like they scare police away from the profession. And then they lower the standards.
Right.
And then it ends up being a worse police force anyway. So you're seeing that same vicious cycle. And so, yeah, the military, we should have high standards for people
Absolutely.
Who are in our armed services.
So let's address the roots.
We need to address the root cause of the issues. And I'm not saying that the government should be overregulating social media, for instance, and private companies. But I think it obviously all starts in the home. I'm a big believer in parental rights. I don't want the government to be involved in people's homes. But it does start with parents realizing the real destructive nature of kids growing up behind a screen. Some of the, I'll just say it, some of the transgender issues and sexual orientation issues in school with kids that's leading to mental health issues at higher rates and suicidal ideation. There's just a lot that kids are contending with that's making them unfit, even if they wanted to. I think you also have kids that don't want to serve in that kind of way anymore. But even if they want to, the military is like, you don't qualify.
But I'm not sure. Yeah, I think kids are lazy. I think kids are much lazier than they were. Like, go outside and play, right?
Yeah.
And they don't even want to do that. So I think that that's a big problem. That's why they don't want to, because you're not seeing the – and they're told that this country is terrible. Garbage
terrible
or whatever.
Racist.
Why fight for
Why would they
want
to fight for a racist, awful
exactly.
country? So we're screwed.
That's crazy.
That whole story to
it
say.
It is scary.
Whole story to say. We're screwed. All right. It is Thursday after all, so let's check in with my sister down in the Sunshine State. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, howdy. Howdy doody.
Cheerio.
J-O. Howdy doody. We had a Florida story earlier this week I wanted to react to, and I know there's also kind of an update on it. We played the video from the Ron DeSantis war room of him. It was so weird because it seemed like he was bashing Trump for just simply being pro-LGBT. And then it went into like all these controversial things that DeSantis had done. It was just odd. And now DeSantis is responding to criticism over it.
Yeah, it was a pretty odd video. And I thought, I was like, wait, who made this? Because I didn't really know who it was for or against. It was just a bunch of nonsense. But DeSantis was on Tommy Lahren's show, Fearless. And he had responded saying, identifying Donald Trump as really being a pioneer in interjecting gender ideology into the mainstream, where he was having men compete against women in his beauty pageants. I think that's totally fair game because he's now campaigning saying the opposite. So that was his way of defending that video, is just saying like, you know, like what he did say. And now I guess it's going against what he's saying now. So,
yeah. And I don't disagree with DeSantis, you know, using and raising awareness for some of the really extreme transgender issues, like men competing against biological women. But what was weird about the video to me is it was like bashing Trump for having, you know, pride T-shirts for sale. And so it was like not drawing a distinction between supporting gay people and supporting, you know, transgender surgeries for children. It was like comparing all those things. And it was very, very strange in that regard. So I don't know. I think that was a big miss. Okay. What else you got out of the state of Florida today?
The Florida GOP is going to require DeSantis and Trump to sign loyalty pledges to make the primary ballot. And this, I guess, is in order for none of one or the other to like defect to another party or another team to run if they don't make the primary ballot in Florida.
It's interesting because they couldn't really enforce that, right? I mean, they could, if Trump wanted to go and say, oh, I didn't get the nod, and so I'm going to run as an independent, they couldn't do anything about that. I mean, I think it would be an uphill battle, but it just seems like it's just sort of a nice thing to do. Like, hey, we're going to sign a pledge that if it's not us, we'll support the other person.
Yeah, I wonder if it has anything to do with like funding or any funds that they've already gotten thus far from, you know, the Republican Party or supporters, that maybe they just don't want to like upset anybody if like maybe they had a whole bunch of Republican backing from not only the, you know, political sector, but private sector. And then suddenly they're like, OK, I'll be independent instead. I don't know. It's very interesting.
Or maybe just that they won't go out and bash them. I mean, it's already gotten really nasty between the two of them. And that's the danger, right? When you attack someone of your own party and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, cool, bygones be bygones. Now I think they're the perfect person for the presidency. And it's like, okay, that's all just deeply disingenuous. Florida story that right now, at least, would impact some people from Washington State. Florida has passed new restrictions on what kind of driver's licenses it will accept as a legal ID there.
Yeah, it does. And this is also, you know, part of the immigration bill we've talked about a couple times. It basically won't accept driver's licenses that are issued to illegal immigrants in other states. Currently, Florida doesn't issue driver's licenses if you can't prove that you're legally residing within the United States. This is just another, you know, attempt at keeping illegal immigrants out of Florida, out of the workforce. There's other things that were in that bill, but they're all coming into effect. So it's going to be interesting to see how they impact a lot of industry down here between the hospitality and travel industry, the restaurant industry, and agriculture.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're trying to travel, for instance, or work there and your ID is not considered a legal form of identification, then you're going to run into a lot of problems. And I'm of two minds about this because I don't think that we should be giving identification to people who are here illegally, because I think it only encourages people to cross illegally and some of the other issues that come along with that. But at the same time, if they're already here and you're not planning to kick them out of the country or anything, and then what? You're just going to make it difficult for them to contribute to the economy, to make a living, to feed their families. It's a weird situation. So that's why, you know, states like Washington, they're like, come on in, we're a sanctuary state, you can do anything here. And I have issues with that because it brings along a lot of other problems. But in truth, we also need immigrants for various sectors of our workforce. So it's all just convoluted and messy.
It is. I mean, it does allow some form of tracking in the sense that, like, they're not obviously just here under the radar. If they're going into a government office and applying for a driver's license, that's, you know, showing some sort of face within the community. You know, I don't even like going to the driver's license office. So,
yeah, I mean, but at the same time, they go in and get those IDs. And I don't know that there is something that they're actually like tracking, like this is an ID that it belongs to an undocumented immigrant. And so it's weird. And I mean, at the end of the day, we just need to fix our immigration system and make it easier for people to come here legally. I mean, you know, make sure there are steps and processes in place. But if you make it easier to do it in the right way, I think fewer people will do it in the wrong way and society will be better off. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
Have a great weekend.
You have a great weekend.
You have a great weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
We have too much fun. We have too much fun. Oh, I was going to hide my soda pop. I got Nicole one too.
Water.
I had to get it today. I like fountain pops better. They're just better. It's a Diet Coke. But I had to get it in a coffee cup because they ran out and it's mushy. It's about to give out.
Can you just like, yeah, I keep picturing it exploding on the desk.
Might happen. All right, we get to your questions and comments from the stream next. But first, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. I mean, what else do I need to say? Nicole, you don't like my cup there?
No, because it's trying to focus on it. So it's ruining your focus.
Sorry. Okay, cup is down. Don't ever interrupt my Eastside Weight Loss commercial again. Wow. How dare you? Dr. Ryan Kugan would be so mad. No. What else do I need to say about Eastside Weight Loss Clinic besides just, I mean, the picture that I've been showing you guys speaks for itself. Down more than 30 pounds on the program and feeling great ahead of my wedding. I just heard from one of you the other day that you're starting your Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan before your wedding as well, which is awesome. My advice to you is to give it 2 months before you try on a dress, because had I tried on a dress for my wedding in November, they would have had to reconstruct it for my wedding because I lost so much weight so quickly. Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan, it's not easy. It's not magic, but it does teach you how to eat better foods in the right portions and then how to maintain it in a way where you're not like on a permanent diet for the rest of your life. So EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. The easiest way to do it is to schedule a free 15-minute consultation online with Dr. Ryan Kugan. He'll go through the program for you and you can decide if it's right for you. And then, of course, if you have great success, or even if you don't and you want to tell us about it, please do, because I love to hear those stories. And I'm sure I'll meet some of you down in Enumclaw this week that have been on the program, because at every meet and greet I've done so far, I've had people there who's like, I did the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan and I feel great. Okay. Questions and comments from the stream. I was going to skip right past it. How dare I? On the Enumclaw event, Teresa says it's a cruise, not a parade. But a cruise to me says water. So I guess classic car cruise.
What?
To me, when I hear cruise, I think you're going to...
Oh, like a cruise,
a sailing.
Like a ship cruise.
But you mean like, cruising down the road.
Yeah, like okay, you go okay. for a cruise.
I'm sorry. It's a classic car cruise. Mm-hmm. I was using the word parade just so people didn't think we were going to have cars in the water, but maybe I'm the only one who immediately goes to water when I think cruise.
Not when I apologize. People don't go to water when you preface it with classic cars.
I don't know. They could be cool ones like the boat cars. What do they call those in Seattle? They don't do those anymore, do they?
The duck.
They got sued.
The ride the duck.
Ride the ducks.
There was a thing where they were going to stop it. I don't know if they found a way around that.
There was a huge deadly accident. Mm-hmm. Anyway, wow. On the All-Star cleanup, Dano says, I'm on a camping road trip. Cool. Trying to catch up with shows in Long Beach, California right now. Going through LA reminded me of home. LOL. Mm-hmm. It's the little things, Dano. It's the little things. Jackie McWalter Huff on Patreon says, in terms of the concrete blocks, don't you know the city of Seattle has always had a policy of do as I say, not as I do. Exactly. I just think it's ridiculous that you have the mayor 1 year ago I won't say he demonized them. Let me choose my words more carefully, but suggesting that what businesses was doing was not the right way. I agree. I think the right way is for us to actually solve the homeless crisis and the underlying issues of substance abuse and mental illness. That would be the right way, Mr. Mayor. But when they've been suffering under the crushing impacts, the economic impacts for their businesses of what the city of Seattle has failed to fix over the past 10 years, despite spending hundreds of millions of dollars, and they, in a last-ditch act of desperation, put down concrete blocks to try to save their businesses from going under, and then they're told they can't do that?
And now the city of Seattle, just so a baseball game goes well, they can put down hundreds of the things. I mean, can't you see how that's a little bit unfair and it's a bit hypocritical? All right. Chris said EcoBlocks is short for economy blocks because they are less expensive than alternatives for building retaining walls. Oh. Oh, I didn't know it was economy. I thought it was like eco-friendly blocks.
Yeah, I was wondering how concrete's really eco-friendly.
I don't know. I saw somebody else online saying they were made of a mix of, like, I think Jason just said it on Twitter, cement and something else. Economy blocks, less expensive than alternatives for building. Okay, we're going to look into this further. Yeah. Not that I don't believe you, Chris. I'm sure it could stand for that. Either way, they are effective in keeping the homeless people away. Maybe it's both. Maybe it just depends on who you are. I wouldn't put it past the city of Seattle just to call them eco blocks to act like, oh, this is everything we do is eco-friendly.
I mean, I do see an eco block as an environmentally friendly brick made of recycled materials and construction waste.
So that,
but also maybe.
Either way, also a block of hypocrisy. Todd says, the issue with moving homeless and RVs out of SoDo, they will move to other parts of Seattle. I like Seattle using eco blocks, but they attacked Ballard for using them. Exactly. Phil says, they're doing it in all areas, cleaning up, arresting more criminals, etc. They'll get it cleared up in time to brag for the upcoming elections. The general public won't even recall that Democrats are the ones that purposely let it all fall apart. The public's memory is short. And that does concern me. I mean, I think if you're watching this show, you are probably not going to have such a short memory about everything going on. And this is the vacuum that we get in. Sometimes when we're really stunned about elections or really stunned about the outcome of a certain race, I'm like, how could this be happening? But I think that's getting in our bubble of constantly paying attention to these issues and forgetting that there are a lot of people out there just trying to live their lives, raise a family, and watch as little news as possible.
And it's weird to me, the most Democrats or people that don't really identify as Democrat, but that argue with me about stuff, I think that they just don't assign blame to the politicians. And that's a weird thing. It's like you have to remind people who caused this and go back. And that's what I have found to be the most interesting in conversations with people that ask me about things that we're talking about or that we're doing. They just don't assign blame.
Or quick to like excuse politicians from, you know, they don't, I think, I'm not going to say it's wholesale for Democrats, but I think there's a hesitancy, especially when, for anyone, when your party's in charge, of rushing to blame that person, right? For what's going on and not some like larger confluence of issues.
Right. But like I was talking about drug use and, and homelessness and things like that. And they're like, oh yeah, but that's everywhere. That's everywhere in the state, in other words, right? Because we were talking about one county, like Whatcom County. Oh, but that's everywhere. That's in Seattle, or, you know, in all the counties. And I'm like, but why?
Why do you think that is? Because it's not in all the states. It's not in all the states. And then people will say, oh, it's the weather here.
Right.
It's the weather here. It's like, okay. I do think there's something to the fact that the weather is nicer in like California. I don't think the weather is particularly nice here year-round. But when you ignore the obvious issues around decriminalization of certain things, then you see where it's gotten worse, et cetera. I think it's convenient to say, oh, it's Amazon's fault. You know, they raise the rents as if people are just falling out of an apartment in Seattle down, you know, on Third Avenue doing drugs. That's just not how it works. So it is a complicated issue.
Right.
I don't want to look like it's just politicians. There's a lot of issues at play, including the opioid companies that got a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't have been hooked on drugs, hooked on drugs.
But again, opioid companies affect all states.
Right.
Right. And so then why are things worse here?
Right. And that's so it's the unwillingness to have a law enforcement intervention that's really making things bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see here. On Dave Reichert, again, we anticipate his campaign announcement tomorrow. Aaron says, how can we help change the Washington governor's race from a Ferguson versus Reichert to a mullet versus Reichert race? I see the latter being closer to a more favorable outcome for the state, no matter who wins that ticket. I mean, I agree. You know how good I would feel in heart if we got past the primary and it's mullet or Reichert? I might retire. Because it's like neither of those outcomes are particularly bothersome. I know some people who are Republicans will not like votes mullet took on 5599, which I have a big problem with, and his vote to ban semi-automatic assault weapons. We are actually having Senator Mark Mullett in after the show today to tape with him. I'm curious to ask him where he thinks his campaign stands with the entry of Reichert and to talk to him more in depth about some of those issues. Because 5599 is a big bother to me. I'm right. very bothered by it. And so, but at the end of the day, he is a Democrat. So Republicans who are like, I'm angry at him for two votes. Yeah, but he's a Democrat and he's agreed with you on a lot of other stuff of right. consequence related to public safety and taxation. So as to your
you're
question,
never
Aaron,
agree with everyone.
Right. You're never going to agree with everything. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are some issues I disagree with Dave Reichert on. As far as Aaron's question, how can we help change the Waugh governor's race from a Ferguson versus Reichert to a Mullet versus Reichert? I don't know individually what you can do. I think that pointing out that Bob Ferguson is a continuation of Jay Inslee, that he's been, you know, the heir apparent in this position of authority, what he has and has not done. So I think pointing out some obvious things about Bob Ferguson, like how much he's cost Washington taxpayers yes. with all these lawsuits by hiding documents, if you get fewer people to vote for him, then that does help, I think, Mark Mullet. But I don't know, individually, I think a Mullet-Reichert general would be very unlikely. Very unlikely. Mm-hmm. Kathy says, Dave Reichert running for governor. We can't forget that Dino Rossi won two recounts plus the original count against Gregoire. We've come a long way since then. We've come a long way with our mail-in voting system. I wasn't around in Washington State during the Gregoire-Rossi situation. Nicole, you were?
I was, but I was just fingers crossed. Fingers crossed we've come a long way.
Oh, we've like, come a long way.
Yes. Yeah,
I'm a fan of the mail-in voting system. I know some people aren't. I really, really like it. I like the convenience of it, et cetera. Are there issues with it? Of course.
Right.
You know, my brother moved to Minnesota and we got a ballot for him like for five elections in a row mm-hmm. until we had to call. So I do believe that there are issues with it. Now, could a Dave Reichert, a Dave Reichert Bob Ferguson race would be really, really close. I think it's going to probably be the closest one we've ever seen between mm-hmm. a Democrat and a Republican in recent memory. And so, yeah, is it possible it could slip into recount territory? I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. But hopefully, if it's done, any of the mistakes or drama or issues from 2004 yeah. aren't repeated.
I'm a little nervous that Kim's not going to be there.
Kim Wyman. Yeah, she's leaving. I thought I saw an article about she leaving her federal job.
I saw something. I think about I it, saw so we'll that.
Yeah, she's
more, but
the job she abandoned us for as Secretary of State. She's leaving, so
doesn't
I'll have
that make
to
you wonder.
Did they wonder give about
the,
what?
I think they gave her the job to get rid of her, and then they made it miserable, and so she'll leave it.
Oh, I don't know. That's possible.
That's my conspiracy
that's possible.
Theory behind it.
Todd, on the military service, lack of readiness, 77% of young people not qualified under current standards to join the military. Todd says, we encourage these mental health issues. We coddle too many. Dealing with adversity makes you emotionally and mentally stronger. 100%. We've talked about this on the show before, where when you are not asked to confront any sort of challenge in your life, any sort of dissent, when you're coddled and everybody's a winner and you're told you're special, and then you're met with a real issue in life, in love for young people, whatever it is, and you resort to drastic outcomes, or you're depressed, you have a mental illness over it. We're not giving kids the tools they need to navigate the realities of life, and that includes deep disappointment and emotion. And that's a really, really scary place to be. Teresa said, my son has been in for 8 years. Thank you to your son for service. Planned to retire out at 20 years. Now he plans to get out after this next four. Says he spends more time in EDI training than combat training. What is EDI training? Is that like DEI training?
That might be what she means.
Oh, okay. Yeah. DEI training. Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me if they are giving too much focus to that. So
diversity,
good comments
equity,
today. Mm-hmm. Diversity, equity, diversity, inclusion. Maybe they just call it something
there
different.
There we go.
Okay, let us close with our sanity check per the usual. So as you know, we're going to be in Enumclaw tomorrow. And this, to me, is the line in the sand between sanity and insanity, whether we can reverse course on Senate Bill 5599 and reverse course on this erosion of parental rights in our state. But it really, I think, is about more than that. It's certainly about more than that to me. It is about whether we want to be a state where the laws are reasonable or a state where the laws are unreasonable. And I've said that I believe, is the true divide in this state and in this nation. It's not Democrats versus Republicans. It's reasonable versus unreasonable. Senate Bill 5599 is an unreasonable law by any common sense standard. There is no reason that physical abuse in a home should be equated to a parent who has concerns or questions about healthcare that their child wants to receive, that their minor child wants to receive. And there is no reason, short of physical abuse, that the state should be hiding kids from their parents. I'm concerned that this is a slippery slope if we don't stop Senate Bill 5599 now. I'm concerned that we could then move forward and pass laws like they have in Oregon, where loving foster parents can't adopt kids because they don't agree with their stated gender ideology. Or like the law that's been proposed in California, where if you as a parent do not affirm your child's desired gender, that ultimately your child could be taken away from you in a custody hearing. That's not right. And that's the slippery slope that we're talking about. So in this line between sanity and insanity, I think this is a big part of the fight. Can we get enough signatures for Referendum 101 to put Senate Bill 5599 on the ballot? And if we can get enough signatures, can we convince the Common Sense Center in Washington State to do what's right, to stop this dangerous policy in its tracks, and to put the majority party in Olympia on notice that these sorts of laws that erode the rights of loving parents are not going to be tolerated. So I said we have set a very lofty goal of 1,000 signatures during our event in Enumclaw. I have faith that we can beat it. If you have been upset by this bill, if you've been upset by the erosion of your rights as a parent in Washington State, and you have not signed Referendum 101 yet, you're running out of time to do it. This is the last meet and greet that we're going to do. I hope you take an opportunity to stop by, to sign it, to grab a spare form, to bring to your family and friends. And let's set the course, a better course for parents in this state, a better course toward sanity, toward reason. And I think that getting R101 qualified for the ballot is a really good step in that direction. So again, we're going to be at Headworks Brewing, 1110 Marshall Avenue in Enumclaw from 3 to 6 p.m. and then stay afterwards for the classic car cruise downtown. So we planned your whole Friday night for you. You don't have to plan it for yourself. That has been our sanity check for today. And that has been today's episode of Undivided, our final live show of the week. Coming up on Sunday for Undivided subscribers, our friend Jonathan Cho is going to be in studio for a personal briefing for you subscribers on what exactly the state of downtown Seattle is ahead of the MLB All-Star Game, which is on the 11th, which is Tuesday. So Jonathan Cho, more than anyone else, has been in the homeless camps. He's been talking to city leaders. He's been looking at the situation on the ground, and he is going to give his honest assessment and interpretation as to whether this is going to be a good event for the city or whether it's going to harm the city's reputation and the region's reputation moving forward. So for subscribers, join us for that chat with Jonathan Cho. And if you feel like it, post some questions for him as well that you might want him to answer about the ongoing situation. If you're not a subscriber already, please sign up. It's just $5 a month. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. Help support our mission and our movement to slowly but surely give common sense a comeback. Subscribers, see you Sunday. The rest of you, see you in the live show on Monday.